Welcome to another episode of the Running Our Mouths podcast, coming to you live from the main square out here in Leuven, Belgium. So if you hear a lot of people in the background or some music, that's where that's coming from. This episode, I'm joined by two of the cast members of The Real Main, Kyle Merber and Riley Masters, both now into about 2 or 3 years of their professional careers. So guys, I mean, this Europe trip, how's it going so far?
It's good.
Yeah.
Happy. Also, I just want to note real quick before Riley says how his European trip's going. I can't believe we're still being introduced as Real Main.
I know. That, what was that, 4 years ago? That was a long time ago.
Yeah, that's gonna stay with us forever.
It will. Yeah, we can never get rid of that.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, sometimes.
I like it. Yeah. It's funny.
I'm sure you guys have been approached about a sequel every once in a while. Just on Twitter,
times.
People asking.
Yeah,
is being approached on Twitter account.
Yeah, I was gonna say. And then maybe the occasional like high school fan at a meet or two.
Yeah. I mean, Feigen is in
very
Texas.
Much retired. Very much retired.
Very much retired. He's an amateur cyclist now, and he's just not running much at all.
And then Eric has been injured for a few years now. He's hopefully, you know, he's still trying to make a comeback, so hopefully he does. So it would definitely be a little bit of a different documentary.
I feel like Eric, his filming skills have gotten much better since The Real Main.
Yeah. It's paying the bills.
Yeah.
Professional
director
different.
Right now.
Yeah.
Which is good.
So we'll talk a little bit about each one of your seasons so far. We'll start off with Kyle. You've got Pan Ams coming up.
Yeah.
Ran in Madrid, ran in Ireland. What's the feeling coming off of USA's?
Overall, I feel like this has already been such a successful season that anything that happens from here on out will be a huge bonus. I feel like I've made a big leap in fitness, and just my mentality going into races is totally different now. Like, I've made the big leap that I wanted to make. And so, going into Pan Ams, though, I mean, you can't ever expect to go into a race in which you're wearing a USA jersey and take it lightly. It's going to be quite the race. There's some really good guys in it, but, you know, I think Andrew Weeding and I are going to be in the hunt, and I'm excited.
Riley, 3 summers in Europe. Is this finally the one where you, I guess, feel the most comfortable as a professional now?
Yeah, I feel much more comfortable over here now. I think I know what to expect over here, which is nice. Plus, I think years past, I hadn't trained for this time of the
that
year.
That makes such a difference.
Yeah, so like coming out of college, I was like, oh, I'm going to come to Europe. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to run PRs. But I had trained for NCAAs and USAs.
Yeah.
So by the time I got here, I was not, like, I didn't want to race anymore.
It's not even just physical. It's like mentally, too.
Oh, so mental.
I would say maybe more mentally.
Well, almost all mentally, yeah.
Because you're not hanging on. You're not ready to be like, all right, I thought I was going to get my 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
You're thinking about it the entire time. It's part of the plan in the season, and so I mean, 3 times doing it now, you expect it.
Right, exactly. This is almost like where the season begins at this point. So I think you race, you prep for USAs, and then now it's like you really capitalize on all that training.
What's been the most draining part?
Draining. I mean, obviously the travel is not easy.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be much more convenient.
You had the worst travel over here.
I appreciate that.
Because you went Portland Track Festival. Two days later.
I decided to drive back to Seattle after USA's, then drive back down to Portland, back to Seattle, and then fly over
9 hours
so,
versus six.
Yeah, which was cool because, like, I mean, hopefully tonight goes, I'm racing Houston tonight, hopefully that goes faster than Portland. But right now, my PR, or my best race of the post USA's, has been 3 hours from my house.
Yeah.
On a drive. So
I haven't seen just like people adjusting. I haven't seen J Mac while the sun is out. Like, I think he legitimately became nocturnal.
I think he's just sticking straight to
which
US time.
Is incredible.
Yeah, good for him. That's actually way more impressive than any time he could possibly run over
when
here.
When the sun goes down, he comes out.
Yeah.
Roams the streets.
So I think travel is the hardest part. But other than that, it's been, I feel much more comfortable over here. I think adjusting to the culture first 2 years was tough, but this year it also makes it easy to adjust when there's a lot of Americans in one spot.
Definitely probably the biggest advantage is the fact that we are all here.
Yeah.
Everyone's friends and hanging out. So you're not you're not like wandering a city lost by yourself and not being able to speak the language. And here in Belgium, everyone can speak every language, apparently.
Yeah, 1 million languages.
So, yeah, it just makes it kind of easy because you're surrounded by people that you're already comfortable with.
Yeah.
I spoke with Joe and Maverick a little bit about that, that feel that you guys come out here, you've got your workouts assigned, but then everything kind of just fluctuates and changes just based off, like, the people that you're surrounded by. You guys, have you guys made a couple changes here and there just because, you know, you wanted to hop in with... with the rest of the group, and you saw maybe it would help.
After Cork, yeah, you and I.
After Cork, we wanted to do a workout, and but it was the, you know, the track wasn't available, and
so we like jogged just for a couple miles, and Riley and I debated about what we would each do and how, yeah, what he wanted out of a workout, what I wanted out of a workout, and it's like you do that after every single race with the people around. You show up at the track and you hear someone's doing a workout that's really similar to yours, and it's just like, oh, I can manipulate mine just a little bit so that way we can run together.
I think that happened with Pat Casey and Garrett Heath the other day, too. They were both down at the track, and they had similar workouts. They would, it would accomplish the same thing, but they were both doing something and did like a hybrid of both of them.
Yeah.
And it worked out. Both of them had a great workout. So, yeah, and that happens quite a bit over here.
Which is a note,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, the camaraderie among the Americans is very cool. It's like you're almost on a team with everyone you compete against, yeah, in the U.S. So it's pretty, it's a cool culture, that's for sure.
You guys are kind of on the cusp of being in the conversation to start being considered to run at some of these Diamond Leagues. But what do you think makes the fast performances that we see at meets like Houston and all that special? Is it just kind of the environment and everyone knowing that they've come out here to run fast, whereas some Diamond Leagues it gets tactical for, you know, the points and all that?
Honestly, it's rabbits.
Yeah.
You have people who are getting paid specifically. I personally think that well-rabbited races is, like, entirely the difference. It's like, is someone doubling back after their own race and trying to hang on for half the distance? Like, going,
yeah,
800 meters in a 1,500 isn't enough. You need,
yeah,
to go past 1,000.
Yeah.
You know, and if you go 1,200, that's when you get legitimate PR.
But I also think it relies a lot on the athletes as well to continue the pace once the rabbit drops off. Because... like, if you look at Portland, when we raced, it was Robbie needed the standard, so he just committed,
yeah,
the moment the rabbit dropped off. And I think that makes a good race where, and like Furman, when Kyle ran fast, it was Corey and Jeff went after it. They knew they were going to go after it, whether the rabbit dropped out at 400 meters or 1,200 meters.
I guess so. Yeah, so in a race in which, like, place doesn't really matter, people just want to run fast,
yeah,
you'll generally get a couple sacrificial lambs.
Yeah.
And they hold on a good majority
well
of the time,
yeah,
but who will just be like, oh yeah, I just need the time,
yeah,
and whereas at USA's or if there's really big prize money, sometimes like people are just like, I just want to win,
right? Exactly. Yeah. And I think at Diamond Leagues too, you see, I think there are great performances across the board because everyone's there. I mean, you have the best athletes in the world in one race, they're all going for a fast time and they know what the purpose is. So I mean, maybe occasionally you'll see one of them or two of them blow up, but typically they're going after it.
Yeah.
So
Kyle, we spoke about this a little bit yesterday on a cool down. You've got your own little solution to something like
what did we talk about where
someone after the rabbit drops off, the pace doesn't slow down. Some ideas you're toying with for the Hoka Long Island.
Oh, okay. This idea. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you want to share that with some of the listeners?
The Hoka Long Island Mile this year, I think what we're gonna do is we're gonna put in a premium on the track at 1,400 meters. And so that way someone kicks 300 meters out rather than waiting till 200 meters out just to get the race going. So when the rabbit steps off, it just is even still going and winding up. So I think like, hey, like here's a few $100 if you're, you know, the first one to kick. It's probably enough incentive,
yeah,
for someone,
I mean,
to just go an extra 50, 100 meters early. And honestly, that makes a really big difference.
Yeah, that's my race plan
the
now.
Pace just, because it just doesn't lag. And so I like thought of it on the run to the track yesterday. And when I got there, I just like threw the idea out. I was like, I think the first person I threw it out to was Will Lear. You know, he's been around a while, and I saw,
yeah,
him sprint all out last year in the middle of the Fifth Avenue Mile versus Lowy to get the premium. And I was just like, Will, what do you think of this idea? And I asked a few other athletes, and everyone was like, I think that's a good idea. Like, I think that might work. So
yeah.
I guess we'll experiment and see if it works. So, yeah, I mean, if everyone runs 350 at the Long Island Mile, we'll know to keep doing that.
Yeah. a great plan.
Have you heard? Did you hear that one yesterday? Did I tell you?
No, I just am hearing about it now, and I'm going
like
to do it.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm going to start kicking. It's going to be a 1400 meter race. We're all going to stop at 1400 meters. You'll keep going and not fast for Long Island.
I would hope that like it's not too much money.
Yeah,
everyone
just stops.
Because something also that I was thinking of is like it'd be so cool if it was crowdfunded. Like the premium was just crowdfunded. Like let's just say. Everyone, just like anyone, can go online and give $5-$10 because they just want to see what happens.
Yeah.
But then I'm kind of worried. Like, what if people thought it'd be funny if they got like, if they raised $5,000, so that the 1400 is like where you get paid the most.
It now becomes the new metric mile.
Yeah.
It's just such an exciting thing to do.
So, but I do. I don't know. Like, has a crowdfunding race for like prize money or whatever?
Yeah.
Just sound. I think Sir Walter may have done it, something like that in his first year.
Similarly, yeah, something similar. Possibly.
I think they at least got their start on Kickstarter or something.
What are you gonna do? Just do like a GoFundMe and like
just,
people can just
throw money
in there.
Or like, what if these are ideas I've been throwing around. All right, so like, what if you can either donate money to 100 meters into the race, 200 meters into the race, 300 meters into the race, and then there's all these different checkpoints in the race that have different amounts of cash. So, like, 500 meters, like, if someone was just like, screw it, like, $300 if you're leading at 500 meters, but then leading at, like, 1400 is only worth, like, $100. It's just, like, everything, but then it's, like, $800. Everyone got together and decided it was going to be $2,000 if you were leading at 800. Like, the race could be a fartlek, or I don't know what would be happening. But kind of an interesting
idea.
So, Kyle, you're racing Sir Walter this year?
Yeah, I'm going to race Sir Walter, yep.
What's the expectation there? I mean, you've trained with a defending champ.
All right, so my goal is to beat Ford, primarily. I want a PR. That's the big goal for the rest of the summer is PR in the mile as well as medal at Pan Ams. I've PR'd at 800, 1,000, 1,500, and 3K this year. So I feel like if I do a mile, that's like, that's really hitting all the bases.
Riley, I think you're going to head out to Portland for that flow track meet, or what's on schedule for down the road?
I still have to talk to Danny. I think that's right now the plan. I'm going to do the Beach to Beacon 10K, head back to Maine the week before that, just to get a chance to visit my folks and run in Maine. It's such a great race. Then... Portland after that, and then I guess Danny will be here in Belgium today, so I'll talk to him a little bit more about what we want to do going forward. That's kind of the plan.
And Riley will be at the Hoka Long Island Mile.
Yeah, that was a firm commitment the day the idea came out.
Yeah. You were my first commit.
That's right.
And it's kind of been cool just being over here because I'm talking to so many more athletes.
Yeah.
And like, you recruiting. Know, like, recruiting, and it's still a little early to get, the field completely solidified, but just hearing... the general interest level, it's really exciting because I think we're going to have some really good fields. And when your own agent comes up to you, it's like, Kyle, we need to talk about the Long Island Mile, about my athletes. It's like, oh, nice. I guess I'm making it.
Riley, how are you going to really peak for Beach to Beacon? Because the main money is getting competitive. You've got Ben. You've got Will Gohegan there now.
Yeah, Will... is lucky. So Ben and I actually don't qualify for main money anymore.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. So there's a lot of main pride on the line still. Like, you still want to be the best main born athlete there.
Why don't you qualify?
They only do, so you have to live in the state of Maine. I think you have to pay taxes in Maine as well. But Will counts because he's still in college. So they give you 1 year after college to do it. So my first year after college, even though I lived in Oklahoma at the time, I was able to go back and be first Mainer. But then they cut you off after that, I believe.
Do you have a Washington driver's license?
No, but I should.
What do you mean? You're
technically,
still.
Yeah. So
you wouldn't give that up? Are you Maine? Are you
I'm
Oklahoma?
Maine right now. Maine.
Okay,
Maine driver's license. So, but I live in Washington.
Yeah.
So going by the rules, I'll have to be, I believe I'll have to, I won't be a Mainer. But there's American money this year. There hasn't been in the past. So there's American and overall money. Plus, like, I think I'm in a different place aerobically than I've ever been. So I think I'm moving more towards like 5K longer stuff.
Yeah.
So I think I'm excited to run a 10 to see how I do. Because that's something that I haven't done recently, or since I've kind of acquired this fitness, so or this like don't know, type of fitness, I guess. So yeah. A lot of strength work with Danny this year. So I'm excited to run it and see how it goes.
Are you going to bump your mileage, like, as you continue to move up or get more serious about the fives?
I think that's the plan. I bumped it the last 2 years, and then we'll see, kind of reassess at the end of this year to see how. I think it went fairly well. I was very comfortable this year running a high 80s, so we'll see where I go with that after this. I think, obviously, the 5 looks to be, like, where I'm going to go after this year. It's nice to be able to go back to the 15 and mile just off the 5K fitness and just do a little speed training in there, too. But and I PR'd in the 15 this year anyway, so and the mile as well. So, yeah, that's kind of the plan right now, just to bump the mileage and see what I can do in the 5K. Because I think that was a good test in the 5 this year.
Yeah. Were you a little hesitant at the beginning with the move, or was kind of your trust in Danny just 100% at that point, and you knew you were ready because he said so?
Yeah, well, I ran one last year, and I thought it went really well, and I was very timid going into it. So this year, like, I knew I wanted to attack it a little bit more, and I thought the standard was very attainable. It was actually I think the fact that it was, like, a softer standard this year made me more excited to run it, because I knew it's like, oh, like, I can go run the standard, I think. And then now, so I got my feet wet in a little bit, so now I want to, you know, see how low I can go, obviously. So I'll go after it again next year.
I think I always knew you would move up to the 5.
Yeah, I did too. I actually was planning on it my fifth year of college, and then we decided against it last minute. I was going to run Stanford.
When did you run 7:54?
I ran 7:53 my sophomore year of college.
I think that's when I was like, oh, Riley's a 5K guy.
Yeah, but, and that was off of like 50 miles a week,
too. 'Cause you're 800's okay, but.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that's 5K looks to be where I'm going to head now, which I enjoy that. I like the 5K a lot. Yeah, it's a lot more fun.
Kyle, we spoke a little bit about it after Madrid. You're sticking to 15 through 2016, and then from there, it's kind of where you and Gags would reassess.
Then we'll dabble.
Well, yeah. Steeple, right?
Yeah, after the steeple.
That's Mitch's big thing. He wants to see one of these strong 1500 guys give the steeple a try, because, I mean, we've seen.
We got Andy Bayer.
Yeah.
And Corey Leslie.
Well, didn't Evan just run 3:32?
So he just wants more of us.
He wants more
to keep doing it. Yeah, I mean, there's an outside chance I would try a 5K early spring next year. But probably after 2016, like, looking very seriously into moving up by 2020 to actually run the 5K at the 2020 trials. So, yeah, I don't know. It seems like an enticing thing, especially in championship races, like former 15 guys. Just all of a sudden you go from having mid-pack speed, you know, to having some of the best speed in the field. Yeah. So it's an enticing thing, I think, for everyone. And if you can train healthy and run enough mileage and put in the work, you hope that you can make the jump.
For you in the 5K, Riley, is it just you and Garrett doing a lot of the work, or do you find yourself still doing a couple workouts here and there with Kaz and Nick?
I think Kaz and Nick they're much more speed-based, so there's nothing. Truthfully, Garrett and I can't cross over with them. I think we ran like a 23 in practice this year, and that's like the slower end for Kaz and Nick. So,
also, can we just talk about Garrett's ability to work harder than anyone?
Garrett's. So we did a workout Wednesday with FloTrack, and FloTrack didn't show that Garrett went on to run a 2:28 after that, those Ks were over. So, like, I did 7 Ks, ended with a 2:30. Garrett kept going into a 2:28 with 2 minutes rest.
Garrett is honestly just an animal.
Yeah, it's remarkable how he just keeps going. Like, he can feel, you can ask him how he feels that day, he'll say terrible, and then just crush a workout.
Does he have any kids? Because I feel like he has dad strength.
Yeah, he might. Yeah. Only 2 that he knows about. 0 that he talks about.
So what was your reaction watching him yesterday in that race in Monaco?
I knew Garrett was going to run well. Yeah. He's just, like,
he's so consistent.
Such a gamer. And it was funny because he texted me this morning and said he felt terrible the whole race and considered dropping out the whole time. But he just is such, he just hangs on and he's going to run well. And he's still, to feel terrible and want to drop out and still finish 5th in the Diamond League is very impressive, but to be expected from Garrett Heath.
Sticking on the Monaco notes, I mean, you guys watching the 15, or trying to watch it, maybe watching the replay on YouTube later on since we struggle out here in Belgium. What were your thoughts on just Kiprop taking it pretty much from the gun and just dominating that race. We'll go to Powell.
It's honestly just so impressive. I was really disappointed. We were listening to it, but we couldn't get the video to work the first time through. And so it was a throwback to like the 1940s, 1950s. It's like hearing races on the radio. And but I mean, 3:26 is so, like, every time so I think fast. Of the split,
yeah.
You come through in 2:45 and you pick it up. You pick it up. You go faster.
Crazy.
It's not like you're holding on. Like, and at one point, it looked like he was maybe tying up a little bit, and then his last 100, he came back to life.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's honestly, for some of those other guys to, like, run ridiculous PRs, but then Kiprop, like, be so far ahead, it doesn't need, like, to run 3:29, 3:30, but have a guy 30 meters ahead. I don't even know what it means.
Well, yeah, but think about, was impressive, but
it's ridiculous.
Jababa demolished them by even more in the women's race and to break a world record. It's crazy that the women's race made the men's race look not impressive,
yeah.
But it was still such an impressive race.
Sometimes when I watch track meets, I get, like, a little upset that I'm competing as, like, a competitor because I want to just be a fan.
Yeah.
You know, like, if it's guys who, if I'm watching, like, a 3:32, 3:33 race, it's not as exciting because I'm like, I just think selfishly, like, I should be in that race, or, oh, like, where would I finish, or, oh, man, like, I used to beat that guy, now he's beating, look how fast he ran, or whatever. Like, I think of it from my own perspective, but, like, watching Kiprop, it's just like, he's so far out, it's just like, I'm full fanboy.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
With the Bobbins race, afterwards we were all trying to figure out the mile conversion and stuff like that. Down the road.
What's crazy is so she went out in 60 or 59. Chanel ran a 64 after that, and then she ran 60s from there.
60, 59. Oh, 59. It was a 60, but it was a 59 from 11 to 1500.
Okay.
So, did she run 201 last 800?
Two flat, 201.
Yeah. Around there. Because the last lap was.
So it's just like, put her in a mile and have her do the exact same thing. Like, she runs 405.
What can she run for an 800?
I mean, she just qualified for the 800, or, like, she hit the A standard in the 800, last 800 of that.
All right, so
15.
Her PRs right now are more or less like IC4A qualifying standard.
For men. Yeah.
For men, right? Like, 8 and 15 both, right? She's actually, 15 5K, but she's actually way faster than the 5K.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Was your
14, I think.
And it's 14:35 or whatever.
Maybe.
All right. What could you run for an 8? Like, what is an IC? What is a 350 1500 guy run for an 8?
I think.
But just, like, do that and then just subtract a couple or add a couple seconds.
Right. Like, I bet you can still run 155.
Yeah. Right.
Like, you have to. Like, yep. She has to.
Definitely.
Right? Like, there's no way you could come through or close in two flat and not be able to run 155.
Yeah.
And I want it, like, maybe faster. Like,
she's doubling at Worlds, right?
Yeah. She should run an 800.
She said it's going to come down to her and her coach talking it out. At first she said she was. Now it's just, like, waiting for the official word. But no one's ever won gold in both the 5K and the 15 for the women.
Okay.
Or even, I think, medals in both.
How is track and field not more popular? I really just love it.
Yeah.
It's the most exciting.
Why doesn't she just triple, like, conference meet in high school?
Yeah.
She could just do it all.
She could.
She could win as a team.
It's funny that that's
possible.
Wow. Yeah, possible. Like, she's, wow. God, she's impressive.
My mind just literally blown.
There really wasn't an unimpressive race.
No, yeah.
At Monaco last night. It was such a good meet. The whole time, incredibly entertaining.
Heather Kamp jokingly tweeted about it, but do you guys kind of reassess your goals, like Olympics, Monaco, Olympics? I mean, where are you guys at with that?
I would sell my soul.
Yeah.
Now, the Olympics is I think would still be the pinnacle. But
yeah.
I think the only reason I want to make the Olympics is so I can get into Monaco.
Yeah.
It's just so fast.
It's so fast.
How far are you guys, you think, down the road? I mean, when do you want to make your Diamond League debut? I mean, it comes down to,
I mean, tomorrow?
Yeah. Immediately.
Yeah.
3 weeks ago.
London's in, what, 6 days?
Like, but just like our timeline.
Yeah. What do you guys see as the timeline? Ideal timeline. Yeah.
Next year. Yeah, it's next always year. Next year. Yeah. You know? I was hoping it would be this year, but you know, we got closer, and then it's like, all right, next year.
Yeah. I think that obviously as soon as possible. I mean, it's like those are the races to be in. That's why people come over here. So.
And you just can't, like, I don't know, just thinking, like, timeline, like, all right, I see myself getting this much faster every year, whatever, whatever. But it's like, at a certain point, it's like, you can't wait. It's like, just do it now.
Yeah.
You know? You don't know. There's only so much. You never know what's going to happen. You never know if there's an injury. You never know. It's like, you always just got to pretend that this is, like, your last season,
right,
sort of.
Right.
And it's like, you got to go all in all the time.
Ahead of 2016, what changes do you guys kind of see, whether it's in training or your environment? Riley, I mean, is there anything kind of big within the Brooks Beast that's happening? I mean, they just added Drew Windle, but that really doesn't kind of affect you guys, right?
No, I think we've got a good thing going with the Brooks Beast, and I think for me, I had a good year, so I want to just build on it and continue to do a similar training, obviously, like progress a little bit with mileage and strength work, and maybe, you know, fine-tune a little bit better for USAs. But I think I have a good thing going with Garrett, Matt, and Dorian, so
yeah.
I wouldn't change anything right now.
Is it tough to kind of find, like, scout out a new addition to join that squad of yours with those three?
Yeah, I think we have such a good dynamic that it's... Yeah, I think anyone who's, like, would want to join our team, it's like, you have to be able to fit in with
right.
us, you know, because it's more than just people who run together, you know, it's people we get along, we hang out every day.
Yeah.
You know, we're very good friends, so it's, yeah, I think it'd be, it's tough to find someone that would actually, like, fit that mold.
Yeah.
Because we are such a small group and tight-knit that, yeah, you have to be someone who, you know, wants to be friends with us. It's more fraternity than, like, a training
That's
group.
That's the hard part.
Yeah.
You know, finding someone who would actually want to hang out with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Outside of just runs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kyle, I mean, with New Jersey, New York, I feel like it grows every, and you get your surprise every once in a while, your Ford Palmers that join, like, the top class, like you guys. I mean, is it, do you see any additional guys coming along for you guys, or?
Well, we've added Johnny Gregoire to the
right.
team, and in addition to just joining the team, Johnny will be moving into our house.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's exciting, especially for me, just having a former college teammate
right.
and friend for a long time added to the team. And it's always just good to keep young, fresh blood around.
Yeah.
They're very excited for the sport and what the professional jump means. When you have young people joining the club, they believe that anything can happen. Their career is so new and the sky is the limit. And you just want that mentality around all the time. And so I think it's really important to have the veterans and the people who have been there and, you know, done it before. But I feel like it's often underappreciated how valuable it is to bring in some new people to just have a smile on their face every day as they do it.
Working with Gags over the last couple of years, that relationship between you and him, how different is it from when you first started?
It just keeps getting better and better. We've always had a good relationship, but we're really starting to figure each other out this year. I think we both were a little shocked at how much I was able to handle at times. And I think next year we'll continue to push that a little bit more and more, just in terms of mileage or the amount of volume I can handle in a workout and how much speed I can occasionally show.
Right.
So I think it's just expanding that every which way, just continuing to challenge yourself, and, you know, that results in faster times on race day.
And then you and Danny, how's that changed since 2013, right? Since your first year with him?
Yeah, I've been with Danny for 2 years now. I guess just a little over 2 years. And I think, yeah, we've been able to just figure out what I respond well to and what I don't. And I think we've really found our groove this year, especially since the new year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to finishing out this year and then just getting right back to the drawing board next year, because I think we've found our groove. And I think that's what it takes, you know, just figuring out, like, having a good relationship where the coach really knows the athlete. And we've been, 2 years is really, I think, when you start clicking with a coach, you start seeing the benefits. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that third year with him. And then obviously with Garrett, Dorian, and Matt, we also have a good thing going too. So it's, yeah, it'll be fun to see, to just keep that going next year, because I think the progression will keep happening.
We'll do one last quick thing before we close out the show. Riley, what is the thing that impresses you the most about Kyle? And then Kyle, what's the thing that impresses you the most about Riley? In terms of athleticism, personality, character, whatever.
His Twitter, maybe. no, I think Kyle's one of those guys that everyone gets along with out here. And so I think just he brings a good personality to every situation he's in. He's someone who people can, like, kind of bond around. Yeah. So I think it's like there's a lot of... There are a lot of different cliques in the professional running world, and I think Kyle's like the middleman between all of them. So everyone can kind of connect through Kyle, which is really impressive. So I think, yeah, just personality he brings to this atmosphere is pretty cool. And what he wants to do to like help grow the sport, like Kyle's more than just like a good runner. He's someone who wants to do good things for track and field.
Right.
And he's got a lot of ideas, which makes, is just exciting, you know, for the future. I think he's someone who we could have in like a leadership role at some point in track and field, which would be kind of cool.
You mentioned his social media stuff. Before you get to answer the answer about Riley, Kyle, I won't, for people who, it's been a joke out here for a little bit among other athletes, but social media and its importance to you, what kind of a tool do you see it as, just to kind of get it out there? I mean, you, I guess, use it to, marketability is a big thing within the sport. What do you think is its biggest strength to you?
Would you like anything else to drink?
Sure, I'll have another Hoegaarden.
Another Hoegaarden?
Can I do another Fanta, please?
A lemonade.
I'm good.
I think that... All right, first off,
order break.
Riley, thank you for the kind words. I appreciate that. Right. But on the topic of social media, I would say the big thing is I think there's a big disconnect in the sport between fans and athletes. And bridging that gap is the biggest challenge. When you line up at a race, are there people in the stands who are rooting for you, or are they just watching a good race? Because when they're rooting for an individual or certain individuals, they're going to be more into it. The same way that when you go to a race and watch your friends run, you're more excited. You have a dog in the fight, and you have a specific mission, a specific goal, something to cheer for. And when you're just at a race, just watching a race, it's just not as exciting. And so if you can connect the fans with the athlete, whether it's, you know, this is my blog, these are my pictures in my life, these are my jokes, and this is my personality, then they form an attachment to the athletes, and therefore they have something that they are rooting for. Maybe they don't like you at all and they want you to fail, you know, but at least that's something that they're rooting for. And I think as athletes, it's kind of our responsibility to get people in the stands to want us to do well or to do poorly. And social media is one of the best ways to do that. Fans will come up to me after races and be like, I love your Instagram, I love your Twitter or whatever, and or I read your blog and it's great.
Yeah.
And, you know, if that's why I have one more fan, or more importantly, is that why one more fan is excited about today's race, then I feel like I've accomplished my job.
Yeah.
As, you know, more than just a runner, but as a professional athlete. So that's why I see social media. And it's fun because we live an awesome life. We travel around the world running races with our friends. It's incredible. And I think it's fun to document it. And, you know, hopefully it inspires some other people to want to come to Leuven, Belgium and hang out with their friends and travel the world. And, you know, I enjoy it. I think it's fun. I think it's a good time. I get a lot of crap for it from the guys, but I think it's also a lot of, like, good, it's like complimentary.
Yeah.
It's mocked in a funny way.
Yeah. It's like 60% annoyance, 40% envy when we make fun of him.
So, I like it. It's fun. It's stupid. And if you don't, like, I can totally understand why some athletes don't want to do it, but I personally like being very transparent as well as accessible.
I think it's part of the job as well.
Yeah.
You know, like, you have to appeal to the fans. Like, truthfully, we're in marketing, so that's a way to market yourself.
No, I just want the sport to be popular, and I think if every athlete, you know, made themselves as accessible and transparent as possible, that it would help.
Down the road, I mean, we'll get to your comments on Riley.
Good, I'm still thinking.
But down the road, something like being an agent or being just someone like, I guess, Brad is to Ray Flynn, who people listening to this might not know, but just kind of like his right-hand man. Is that something you want to see yourself transition to after your running days are over?
Yeah, I definitely see myself staying in track and field. My big goal is I want to help make the sport popular after my own career. How best to do that, like, I don't know. I'm still figuring that out, and I think about it a lot. But, you know, being an agent, meet director is definitely something that I've thought about a lot. I think that'd be a really fun position. You know, working for a shoe company that is maybe elite athlete oriented or really helps promote that side of the sport, like Hoka, you know, I think they're doing great things for the sport. And not only in the sense, I was running with Leo the other day and we're talking about all the things that Hoka is doing for the sport. And we're saying, it's not even just that Hoka's signing people to contracts, but because Hoka is signing people to contracts and giving people fair deals and allowing them to really chase their dreams, other companies, if they want to sign athletes, now have to step up even further. Yeah. And so overall, like, the athletes are getting more, and that it's just good. It's just, they've set the bar, they've helped raise the bar, and everyone's responding to it. If you want advertising space on a website, like, you have to, you know, I have to pay more because there's more competition. If you want, if you want to be anywhere now, like, if you want to sponsor a meet as a shoe company, like, there's more competition, and you have to do it, though, if you want to be visible. And so more money that's being poured into the sport, the better and better it is for everyone.
Cool. Now to Riley.
I would say Riley, can we have a little, do you have any more questions? Can I have some more time? No, I'd say Riley's biggest thing is how professional he is and keeps things at this, especially at this point in the season and seeing it in Europe. I think a lot of people come in and they are easily like, oh, USA's is over, the season is over, like, let's just have a good time, let's go enjoy the European vacation.
Yeah.
And we'll race as well, whereas Riley really does show up here to race and run well and to run PRs, and he does so professionally, and he continues to make those sacrifices at a point in the season when it is very difficult too. So I think, you know, hanging around Riley while in Europe is definitely a beneficial thing, because if everyone's sitting in the square and it's, you know, having a good time and talking and laughing and telling jokes, but the sun is still out because it doesn't go down until 10:30 here, Riley's the first one to leave and say it's time to go to bed, because, you know, he's here for one thing, and to get some PRs. So that's the compliment, I guess, for Riley that I have.
All right. Well, we wish you guys the best of luck at Houston or Pan Ams, in your case, Kyle.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining the show.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.